KFMO West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento.
Basketball's postseason plays here. ESPN 1320, a radio.com sports station.
Driven by Lasher's Elk Grove Dodge.
Live from Sacramento, California.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Featuring Damian Barling.
Yes, I absolutely still love Russell Westbrook. So what?
And Kenny Caraway.
Sometimes you're really just vibing out.
This is D'Lo and KC.
I'm the street's voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked.
On ESPN 1320.
Yeah, well, we are thrilled that you are here with us on this hump day. I'm Damian Barling, I think. Kenny Caraway is with me.
I'm here. Technology hating on me, but I'm here. I'm across the airwaves. Let's put it like that.
Okay. All right. Well, we're happy you're here. Why are you here? Why don't you pump up that microphone just a smidge bit there, player? We're going to talk about the Kings here in just a second, Kenny. I couldn't help but this is nothing to laugh at. But I couldn't help but laugh at the report that the LSU-Florida game coming up this weekend has been postponed. Why has it been postponed? Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure it out. Florida has, count them, 21 total players who have tested positive for COVID-19. 21 total players and two assistant coaches. Now, that on the surface is, hey, it's you knew you were going to have to deal with this, especially in college where it's just all, you know, whatever. It's college. College students are being college students, right? So they're out there doing their thing. But what's making me laugh is that the Florida coach was bitching about the crowd that they had to deal with last week. Well, I sure hope that that we get a crowd out there and, you know, we can get, you know, 60 and 70 and 80,000 packed in here. And I sure hope that we've got a crowd on hand for this game against Baton Rouge or against this game in this game against LSU. And whoops, hasn't that soundbite from about 5 days ago hasn't aged too well. For the Florida head coach there. But LSU and Florida, about? It's off, man. It ain't happening.
What is he talking about? Stop,
bro,
man.
What do we've been talking about this for months? We've been talking about this ever since the SEC said they were going to play, ever since the Big Ten was like, oh, well, maybe we can play. Now Pac-12, oh, advances in testing. This is going to be the result. This is what you're getting right here.
I mean, like you said, I'm not sure what they expected. I'm not sure what they thought was going to go down. But college campus, especially in a place like Florida, hello, you know, they getting Tampa Bay, they getting full capacity for the Super
full
Bowl.
Full capacity, yep. Yeah. But so. Not just for Super Bowl, for WrestleMania. Yeah, they're going ham.
Wow. Yeah, they're definitely going ham. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a bad called damn. Just the first word is dead, and the last two words are the same. Instead of hard, it's dead. If you don't know what the last two words are for, well, figure it out for yourself. The Kings and Monty McNair, they continue to shape their front office. The additions are being praised all across the board here. Wes Wilcox, it's interesting. Wes Wilcox was a finalist in the general manager, like the job Monty McNair got. Wes Wilcox was one of the finalists. He was a former Hawks general manager. He was there when the Hawks were doing really well. I think he's been labeled since as a special advisor. Let's see. We got Philadelphia's Phil Jabbar. If that's pronounced wrong. He's now the vice president of player personnel. And Paul Johnson, previously with Oklahoma City, he is now the director of basketball operations.
Well, I like that. I like Oklahoma City. That's a good program. College, but yeah. You know, a good franchise to come from. They do things the right way in OKC.
In reality, I don't know, man. Like, I'm reading about them just like everybody else is. I don't have a scouting report on front office executives. That's right. Just not my
bag choir here, man. That's not like it's cool to have things in place, and it's good that it finally seems for the first time in
ever.
I don't
the yeah, word you're I looking mean, for is ever.
I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to show some respect to like to Jeff Petrie. I don't know what kind of,
well, sure,
you know,
that was a long time
on.
Ago.
But yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking back years. I'm thinking like first time in like 20 years, 15, 20 years, where there seems to be a something that resembles a modern NBA front office, right? And you got people that specialize in certain things, that bring certain things to the table, and they all collab in one, and they get with Monty McNair, and they come together to make these basketball decisions. And that's a plus. I think everybody's in agreement. That's a big-time plus, that we just have something that at least it looks like it's going to be a competent front office.
Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Right. But like you said, I have no idea. Yeah, if these people walked in my living room right now, I'd be like, excuse me, are you lost? Who are you? Get out of my house. Like, I have no idea who you are.
Well,
you
know I would hope so. If anybody just walked into your house right now unannounced, you'd be like, hey, like, are you lost? Like, why did you just walk into my house?
Well, if Ashanti walked into my living room, she's 40 years old yesterday, and she walked in, she could have a seat. We could all mingle and watch a good show on TV. She can walk in the house.
Before Jazz promptly threw her ass out?
Jazz would beat her down.
I've got a lot of Ashanti questions that might be more appropriate for, like, a special D'Lo and Casey podcast.
The Patreon episode.
But yeah, it might be a pay-per-view type podcast, because I saw Ashanti's 40th birthday trending, and I've got questions. I've got questions. I think one thing that Kings fans can be excited about is that Wes Wilcox was a part of the general manager search. He was a part of, you know, the interviewing process, and Monty McNair was able to grab him and get him to join the staff as an assistant, which is, you know, pretty cool. And, you know, sarcasm, but not. I'm really thrilled that there's no one from the 2001-2012 roster here making decisions for the Kings. I'm glad that, you know, Hedo Turkoglu, you know, or Jason Williams or Mike Bibby. Like, I'm glad.
If Jason Williams wanted to be in the front office, he could be in the front office. I want me some white chocolate in the front office.
I'd rather have Jason Williams on the coaching staff. Okay. I've heard, actually, the first person I ever heard say this was your guy, Hubie Brown.
Oh, yeah, that's Hubie, my guy. Yeah.
Hubie Brown has been insistent that Jason Williams is one of the smartest basketball players that he's ever seen in person.
I can believe that. He's a point guard. He's a point guard. I can believe that.
I hear that about Jason Williams. I hear that about Rajon Rondo as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the basketball mind on Rajon Rondo is just, you know, phenomenal. If he's ever able to maybe relate to people a little bit better, he'd be a phenomenal coach because of the way that he sees things. But I'd rather have Jason Williams on the coaching staff than in the front office. But I think you know what I mean by this. Right. There's no Vlade hiring his buddy Peja. Doug already has a position solidified with the Sacramento Kings. I'm good with DC there. Mm-hmm. You know, what else do we have? Like, let's move forward. And it feels like for the first time under Vivek Ranadive, the organization is moving forward. It's not moving backward. It's not trying to capture lightning in a bottle. It's not trying to be the Golden State Warriors. It's not doing any of that. It is an organization that is moving forward with Monty McNair at the helm to put things together from here.
Hey, and look here. You got to call a spade a spade. This guy gets raked through the coals on numerous occasions on social media and in the media in general. You got to tip your hat to Vivek Ranadive. Vivek Ranadive handled this about as well as you would want an owner to handle it. He had a thorough search. He seemed to listen to people. He hired a guy that's well respected, and he allowed that guy to go out there and fill up his staff. And he also did a thing where he was able to get Alvin Gentry, you know, whatever relationship, whoever it was, Luke's or Joe Dumars or whatever, they got Alvin Gentry, a certified piece to that coaching staff. You got to tip your hat to Vivek, because if it would have went another way, people would be killing him today. So you got to give him props for that.
Well, I think what you might be talking about is you got to give him props for stepping back, because it appears just by the makeup of this, because what we've seen from Vivek, and this is what I was alluding to a moment ago, we've seen him pick pieces from Golden State, or we've seen him pick pieces from Kings of the past, and now it's like, okay, we hired Monty. We talked about this. We talked about this the day Monty McNair was hired. What's his first order of business? Well, his first order of business is filling out the rest of his front office, and it appears he was able to do that with little influence from the owner. Now's the next step. I love, and you bring a great point. The Alvin Gentry thing is awesome, and it feels like And I could, it could absolutely be 100% an overreaction. Nothing has happened yet other than, you know, some GM hires, some front office hires, some a coaching staff hire. I hope this is a cultural shift. And, you know, things like, you know, Deuce and Moe brought up a great point on their podcast this morning that, yeah, maybe you don't have players popping off to the media anymore. You know, now that you have a maybe you, with a coach like Alvin Gentry on the bench, and with a front office that, you know, maybe the edict is pretty clear. You've got issues. Like, we'll fix these issues for you, but we're not trading Buddy to Philadelphia because he wants to go to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We're gonna trade Buddy or whoever, wherever gets us the best deal. Like. Yeah. We're not the regime of the past, even though Ken Cantinella is the one, you know, the one holdover. He was
he's good at what he does.
100% agree. Yeah, I was thrilled that Ken Cantinella was staying back and joining this front office.
But Damien, I'm not going to say this was your intention, but I'm going to push back a little bit because what you said about Vivek was a little bit of a backhanded compliment. He gets credit for stepping back, and I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
He, like I said, if it would have gone another way, he would be getting destroyed. He gets credit for going about the process the way that he chose to go about the process, whether that's hiring a firm, keeping Joe Dumars around,
absolutely,
having a conversation with Monty. Like, he orchestrated this. And for the process, I'm going to give him credit. And like I said, I'm not going to say it was your intention to give him a backhanded compliment, but that's the way those type of things kind of come off sometimes. I'm going to give him credit for handling this the right way.
I'm not giving him a compliment at all. I'm just running off of what you said. You just said he deserves credit. My feeling is he deserves credit for stepping back a little bit. You're 100% right in the hiring of the search firm. He was, as we, you know, he learned, he was, you know, kind of at the head of the table when it came to these interviews. That's fine. I'm with that. This front office feels like, I have no idea, I wasn't there. It feels like this is what Monty McNair put together.
Mm-hmm.
And I it's not that the line of Vivek allowing, you know, the top guy in the front office to put his front office together, which is something he hasn't done in the past. Yeah, like I give him credit for that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That line's not meant to be a backhanded compliment at all. I don't even know that it's meant to be a compliment. I'm just saying that's the way the basketball organizations run. If I'm the head of the company and I hire Kenny Caraway, I expect Kenny Caraway to do his job. If Kenny Caraway is the head of the company and he hires Damian Barling, I think you believe I should be able to do my job, and part of my job is hiring the people, you know, to work directly with me in putting whatever project that we're working on together, to be able to put it together in the most efficient way. And I think that's what we saw from Monty McNair.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a sign of what we as Kings fans have gone through for, like we said, right. We don't know, right, the last 20, 25 years. Yeah. That just the fact that we don't know these people, that it's not like they're necessarily big name front office guys. We just know they're in the front office. There's a structure. And we're like, this is awesome.
It's Jason Jones' line. The last time he joined us, it was perfect. PTSD. The Kings have PTSD, and it's like when something normal happens, you feel like you have to celebrate it, and this feels normal. Sheldon Williams, he used to play for the Sacramento Kings. He hosts a podcast now called The Lease Is Up. He's going to be with us at 12:55, and you had to wait an extra day. But D'Lo and KC, we know you've been waiting for it. D'Lo and KC.
This is a big rich town.
Come on now. Not that one. There it is. I'm going to hit the right button at some point. We've got our power rankings coming up here as D'Lo and Casey continue on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and Casey. D'Lo and Casey continues on ESPN 1320.
You're just tuning in. You missed the opening part of the show. You can download the radio.com app in your app store, no matter what device you're using. I'm going to guess this radio.com app is going to work fantastic on the brand new iPhone 12 when it comes out next week. So no matter what phone you have, search radio.com in your app store. Hit the download button. Register. It only takes 2 seconds. It's completely free. Search ESPN 1320. Hit the heart button. And if you miss any part of the show, you can use the rewind feature. If you get days behind, no worries. We've got you covered. The radio.com app is the exclusive home for the D'Lo and KC podcast. Now, yeah. Kenny, got some devastating news. The NFL has canceled the Pro Bowl for the first time in 1949. Kenny, what is your favorite Pro Bowl moment?
Sean Taylor.
Okay, I was expecting you to say nothing because I don't even know what Sean Taylor moment you're referring
when
to.
When he cracked the mess out of the punter that tried to run.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
I mean, it's
that's
not
fine.
One of my top 175 NFL moments ever, but when you just mm-hmm. narrow down to the Pro Bowl, that's probably the only one that comes to mind. Did Peyton Manning go in on the kicker at the Pro Bowl? Remember he said our idiot kicker? Wasn't that at the Pro Bowl?
When the kicker was I recall that. I don't remember if it was the I don't remember if it was like at the Pro Bowl. Like, was he doing an interview at the Pro Bowl when he said it?
Yeah, it was like a sideline. Obviously, I think it was the season was over.
Yeah,
and I think it was at the Pro Bowl.
It was when. Yeah, it's when it was Vanderjagt, right? He was like the most accurate kicker in NFL history. He misses the game winning. Yeah. He misses the game, and then he crosses Peyton for whatever reason.
Yeah,
and I don't think he ever worked again. I think they were like,
Peyton made him disappear in the NFL sense.
I think that is exact. I feel like maybe the Cowboys signed him or tried to sign him, but I don't remember him. I don't remember him being around much after that.
Yeah, that Jesse put it up in our Slack. Yeah, that was at the Pro Bowl where our idiot kicker.
Oh, fantastic. That is just fantastic. Yeah, the Pro Bowl in Las Vegas, though, they're just shutting it down.
Now,
and they're going to reimagine it, as the press release says here, and it'll be back.
Now, let me say this. Let me say this. We just spent about 2 or 3 minutes talking about there's no memories from the Pro Bowl, trash, all this other stuff. It has been. All right. Nobody cares. The Pro Bowl in Las Vegas, Nevada. Wait a minute. Okay. We might be on to something here. You mean to tell me? You mean to tell me that that's not a good look? A Pro Bowl in Las Vegas?
That feels like disaster for everybody involved. You've got football players on a paid trip to Las Vegas. They wouldn't hold an all-star game in Las Vegas for years because they were terrified what would happen with the NBA all-star game going on in Las Vegas.
No, I'm just raising my hand because, Damien, I survived the 2007 all-star game in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I can say from being there, they're never having another all-star game there again.
So
that's a fact.
The all-star game is the NBA all-star game is it's an experience that everybody should have one time.
Oh,
like,
man.
When I say they come out,
oh,
bruh.
Man, it is lit. You want to know the definition of lit? All-star weekend. Vegas, nothing will ever top Vegas.
I can't imagine.
Insane, right?
Yeah.
L.A. is always a good time. I'm pretty sure Toronto was dope, although it's like 2 degrees, so that's not a good thing. For whatever reason, Damien, I thought they would have been done this. They haven't gone to Miami since like 1990. And it's not even on the docket. Like, they've got the next four mapped out, and four are ones that you can definitely miss.
Like, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with arenas. Like, I did Orlando. The arena was relatively new. Mm-hmm. It might have been brand new when they went to Orlando. I did that one. I've been to Phoenix, New Orleans.
New Orleans
was something.
Oh, New Orleans.
New Orleans was pre-vegan days. So I got out there and like we went to, I'm sure one of the established restaurants, but they had this, it was called a fried platter. It's exactly what it says it is. So, you know, when you order food, particularly when you eat like I do, it's normally your plate comes, it's rather colorful. Mm. Like it's got vegetables and like, you know, the healthier, one of the lines that vegans will tell you is the healthier you eat, the more colorful your plate is. They brought out this vegan platter, and his joint was golden brown.
Like from, straight brown.
From one end of the platter to the other. If you could roll it in something and throw it in grease, it was on that platter. Oh, and there were people eating crawfish. I mean, dude, eating in New Orleans is an experience that everybody should have.
Man, crazy. And that's before you get off off Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. Just go into the city a little bit, and it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, there,
my best memory. There was a time where Darren Williams was once considered one of the best point guards in the league. Mm. I know it seems crazy. We used to compare Darren Williams to Chris Paul.
That was bad. Yeah.
So we're coming back from some event, and I'm walking down the street with Darren Williams, and we see a mob of people coming towards us, and Darren goes, "Uh-oh." I swear to you, they ran right past him because Silk the Shocker was behind us. And if there is one thing in New Orleans that is bigger than an NBA player, that is bigger than the NFL, it's the No Limit Soldiers.
Yeah, No Limit and, Cash Money is what it is. In high school, this girl used to say, I look just like Silk the Shocker.
I could see it. Maybe
that was before I had the beard and the facial hair and everything. And she's like, "Hey, you look just like Silk the Shocker." Silk the Shocker, the worst rapper of all time. He's worse than Blueface.
That was one of the worst eras of music ever. The No Limit era of music was just dreadfully awful. And like
some
you
bangers
could,
though. They got some bangers, but
they don't age well. Like. Make them say, like, that doesn't age. Like, at no point over the last, like, 20 years have I thrown on Make them say,
I haven't thrown it on, but if it comes on, come on, man, I'm bopping. I'm bopping.
You don't even bop to that song. Like, you have to get violent. It's Snoop's worst time. Like Snoop was on a... yeah, it's definitely... Snoop was on No Limit, like, for
That was an under the radar album too.
It was
top
trash.
Dollar with the gold fleek collar. Ooh, what? Come on now. All but right. To your original point, the Pro Bowl in Las Vegas, we might be on to something.
Okay.
They tried it in Honolulu. That's kind of old school. They, for whatever reason, went to Orlando. Garbage. The Pro Bowl in Las Vegas. I'm going to make an appearance.
Why did
I don't
that
know when,
happen?
But I'm going to make an appearance.
Was that Disney? Was it like the Walt? Was it the ESPN tie-in? I can't remember why it went to Orlando. Like who wants to go to Orlando? Like, hey guys, congratulations, you made the Pro Bowl. No. Instead of going to Hawaii, we're gonna go to Orlando. Now I'm not crapping on Orlando. Orlando's a fine place. But if you're an NFL player and you just spent the last 17 weeks traveling all over the country, I'm gonna guess maybe going hanging by the Pacific Ocean is a little bit more appealing than going to hang out with Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. No. That's not it. I hope they never go back. I'm going to Vegas though.
Okay. You've said that like 10 times. I no longer feel like you're talking to me. I feel like you're talking to ESPN management, telling them like, hey.
We're doing the show live from Las Vegas when it happens.
The fact is, if we continue on this trend that we're on, we could do the show from Vegas and no one would know. We just gotta pack up our microphones, pack up our little boxes and head to the strip.
Yeah.
I did the strip. The Titans, they beat the Bills last night. That was a hell of a win for the Tennessee Titans.
Big time.
Who they've been under COVID protocol seemingly forever for the better part of the last 2 weeks. They beat, I think this is a line I'm going to steal from you, Kenny. They beat the brakes off the Buffalo Bills 42-16. Tennessee now 4-0. Like, all right. I wasn't sure what to think about them entering the season. But they're 4-0. They also started 4-0 in 2008. They wound up finishing that season 13-3. Buffalo, as you know, your Buffalo Bills entered the game 4-0. And they're going back with their first loss. Not Josh Allen's best performance. Really wasn't a good performance overall from Buffalo. You heard this line a million times yesterday during the broadcast for those who remembered it was on, because I certainly forgot until about 5 o'clock. you heard the line. It looks like Buffalo is the team that has been off for the last 14, 15, 16 days or whatever it is. And Tennessee looks like they're hitting on all cylinders. And they most certainly were. A super efficient performance from Ryan Tannehill. 21 of 28, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions for him. Derrick Henry with a probably the biggest highlight, like, 5-yard run you'll ever see, which
poor Justin Norman.
Is that worse? Like, what's more like social media humiliating, getting dunked on or what Derrick Henry did to Josh Norman yesterday?
It's absolutely what Derrick Henry did. That just, like, getting dunked on is like I mean, the stiff arm is a play, too. But getting dunked on is like, it's just a play. You know,
Garrett Temple used to say,
it doesn't necessarily take your manhood.
Garrett Temple used to say, like, I'll never be shy about getting dunked on because it means I was doing my job. Like, I was trying to contest the dunk. I'm not going to shy away.
No big deal.
Dude, when someone sent out the tweet that Derrick Henry pushed Josh Norman so hard, he landed in a Street Fighter pose. That's where I lost it. That's where I was like, I can't deal with Twitter tonight. They're going in hard.
Somebody
on,
had
on
him,
Josh Norman.
Had the steal of Josh Norman, like how Jazz used to get thrown out of the Fresh Prince's house.
Yeah.
Cold, man, cold. Yo, y'all some talented people out there on the internet, man. Y'all some talented people, I tell you that, man. Use your powers for good, because y'all some talented people.
But for all the bad things that the internet does, man, it has exposed people's creativity and their digital talent, if you will. It wasn't the most efficient day, by the way, as we noted. That's going to be a highlight of 5 yards that's run forever. He only had 57 yards on damn near 20 carries, but he had 2 touchdowns. And the Tennessee Titans, he's scored multiple touchdowns in 10 games. And the Titans have won all 10 games in which Derrick Henry has scored multiple touchdowns. As a matter of fact, the only other running back to score multiple touchdowns who has a better record is Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch gets in the end zone on multiple occasions. His teams had a stretch where they were 13-0.
Now this brings up a great point, okay? And you talk about Derrick Henry's day, and you talk about he's got 2 touchdowns, and what'd you say his numbers were?
What was it? It was like 19 carries. Yeah, 19 carries to be exact, 57 yards.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, you know, I'm going about my business. I'm back in the garage again last night. You know, I'm pumping that iron. You know what I'm saying? Doing what I can, you know, to stay fit, to stay looking good out here, right? And like I mentioned yesterday, the TV in the garage is a one-station TV pretty much. Mm-hmm. When it's on, I'm locked in on that. Obviously, like the big rant I went on yesterday, it was on Major League Baseball. Go Braves, okay? Now, I start getting tweets. I start getting people talking to me about, oh, you want to run that back about Ryan Tannehill? Look at Tannehill. Hey. Look at what Tannehill's doing. So I'm like, man, geez, what that boy do out here? I saw the score. It was like 42-10 at one time. I was like, man, Tannehill, that boy must have tore it up, man. He must have had about 450, you know, killing these boys out here. So let me check these stats. 21 of 28, 195 yards? That's what y'all tweeting me about? 195 yards? Come on, man. Y'all got to stop this.
First,
he had a good game. They're 4-0. He's playing well. I have no problem with Ryan Tannehill. But y'all can't be tweeting me after 195 yards.
Bro, just at me. Don't be so passive-aggressive.
Well, you
I'm
weren't
right
the
here.
Only one.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't start it, actually.
I know I didn't. It was us collectively, because I was tagged in some of the tweets that were being directed at you regarding Ryan Tannehill. This just goes back to, I ran that clip back only because there was one line in it that I thought was particularly appropriate. When he's out on the field for his teams, and this goes back to Miami, his teams win. I mean, he wins games. No, he doesn't put up the Patrick Mahomes gaudy numbers. No, he doesn't have the highlight reel that Lamar Jackson has. He doesn't have the endorsements that Baker Mayfield has. He doesn't have the looks that Jimmy Garoppolo has. But this dude goes out there and wins football games.
Yeah. And look, like I also tweeted to you, they're 4-0. He's playing well.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the bottom line.
Oh, there was a tone to that text, by the way.
Right now.
I don't think that was lost on me, fam. There was a tone to that text about their 4-0 and he's playing well. Like, I could tell it. I sensed it.
I'm giving his props. I don't have no time. I don't have no problem with Ryan Tannehill. I don't have no problem with him.
It was a tone.
I wish him all the best.
Yeah, I didn't know, man. I did not know what to think about this team entering the season, coming off of the season that they had last year. But Mike Vrabel's got these guys playing really well. And
defensively, I'm impressed with what they do as well. They've got a defense that can go far in the playoffs. In my
opinion. That was, I mean, they were, and that's why, you know, we use the term sex appeal on this show so often. That's why they don't have it. Like, they were defensively, they were good last year, and their run game was, I mean, that stretch that Derrick Henry went on at the towards the end of the regular season heading into the playoffs, I mean, that solidified who and what Tennessee is. And no one really, I guess this is a similar situation that happened with the 49ers. No one gets really amped up over a run game. Unless you got, you know, Derrick Henry was rushing, it felt like, for 200 yards a game during a certain stretch last year. So that got, like, a nod. But I still think people were like, they're going to wind up playing Baltimore. Like, what's it really matter? But was Tennessee good enough to crack our power rankings, our prestigious D'Lo and Casey power rankings? We'll have that coming up for you. 916-349-1320 if you want to jump in and be a part of the show. At D'Lo and Casey on Twitter. Let's go to Joseph. Joseph, we appreciate the call, man. What's on your mind?
Yep.
What's up, Joseph?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Want to talk about last night's game. It's one thing I hate to talk about, man, when it comes to sports, but I got to, the officiating was atrocious. The officiating across the NFL has been atrocious. Man, it was nearly unwatchable. There were so many flags at times. They're calling false starts. And it's just been bad, and I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, it's kind of an evergreen topic there. Joseph, we appreciate the call, man. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it, and thank you so much for calling as well. 916-349-1320. Joe, I don't know, man. There are a couple of games over the last – the problem is if one lingers around for each week, it feels like a problem that goes on forever. And then when it's in a game that's by itself – like last night's was, it's like, oh my gosh, man, what's happening? And there was a stretch where, I don't remember what quarter it was in, where it felt like there was a flag being thrown every play for like a stretch of like five or six. It's like, all right, dude, like, is this officiating or is this lack of discipline from these two football teams? Like, which is it? And it got to be a little, aggravating. I think there were a total, I mean, Buffalo had 10 penalties themselves yesterday, which, you know, other than Raider standards, that's a lot.
Right.
The Raiders, who were regularly getting 20 penalties a game like a year ago.
Yeah. I just think officiating and refereeing in general, it's just dumb. Like, they get played constantly. Like, in the NBA and the NFL, they get played with these flops. If I was a referee or an official in the NFL and somebody's flopping around just being extra – that has nothing to do with the play, I tell him, get up. I'm not calling that nonsense. I go to the captains before the game. I was like, look, I'm not calling no nonsense. All right, so stop the flopping. Stop all this. And I would have that outlook, and these referees and officials just be getting played. Like, they just, like, I see the replays of some of these things. I'm like, the referees just look stupid. Like, they do.
It's a tough job, man.
How you get sold on it? It is tough. It really is tough. I've tried to referee a third grade rec league game, and that ain't easy, right? So it is tough. But sometimes, man, yeah, they got to be better than that. They're supposed to be the best of the best.
I don't know which sport's more difficult, man. But football's normally, by who throws the flag, you can tell what the penalty is. Like, if the flag comes from behind the line of scrimmage, it's probably holding on somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it gets to the point where, like, pass interference has become just impossible to know what is pass interference. It's similar to a catch. You don't know what a catch is in the NFL anymore. Like, I mean, was it – I can't remember if it was DK.
Seattle.
I don't – bro,
I thought the Seahawks got robbed on that end zone touchdown.
But they didn't. Like, that's the wild part. Like, by the letter of the law, it wasn't a touchdown, but it was like, man, dude caught it. Crossed the goal line
and he got knocked out after
a little bit.
Crossed the goal line, like,
yeah.
That should be a touchdown.
Yeah,
if it was a runner and he broke the plane,
yep,
and somebody came and knocked it out after he broke the plane, it'd be a touchdown. I don't know what the difference was there. I saw the same exact thing. So you know, one thing that I did learn, this is useless knowledge, but I learned like a year ago that when they throw the flag, they throw it to the spot of the foul. I didn't know that. I thought they just threw the flag.
No, they unless it's a play down the field, you'll see referees throw the flag like 50 feet in the air. But no knowledge is useless, Kenny. Come on, man. That's all valuable.
They say this is a big rich town. I just come from the poorest part.
So we just gave Tennessee all their roses, as Kenny Caraway likes to say. But did they crack the D'Lo and KC power rankings? You want to go first or you want me to go first?
Sure, I'll go first this time.
All right, I like this.
We're going to start from number 5, where I have the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay,
as
okay.
As number 5 in the KC NFL power rankings. At number 4, making their debut.
Oh, boy.
I got the Tennessee Titans. They have knocked the Buffalo Bills out of the top 5 with that win. It's only right. And they are now the number 4 team. I really thought about putting them at number 3. Because if we were on a neutral field right now, I think they would beat the number 3 team, and that's the Seattle Seahawks. I borderline think they would beat the Seattle Seahawks, right? But I'm leaving the Seahawks.
Mess is this?
This is the people's man's, because they see what I see. All right, so Seahawks are number 3 by a hair ahead of the Tennessee Titans. Number 2, we've got a new number 1, ladies and gentlemen. It's only right.
Wow.
The new number 1. The number 2 team is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
After they lost to the Las Vegas Raiders on Sunday at Arrowhead. You can make the argument they should be down to number 3. You could really make the argument that Tennessee should be number 2 right now. If you want to come at me at IMKDiddy, at D'Lo and KC on Twitter, make the argument for Tennessee being number 2, because I think you can do it. But right now, we got the Kansas City Chiefs, number 2, and the new number 1 in the KC power rankings here on D'Lo and KC, the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers. They're the number 1 team in the game.
I like it. We're going to shift gears in 15 minutes. Sheldon Williams, former member of the Sacramento Kings, Duke legend, he's going to join us. We'll talk basketball. We'll talk about what the next season looks like. And I guess the Van Gundys may be returning to the coaching range. And is Mike D'Antoni going to take an assistant job? We'll explain all of that as the show rolls along here. Now for the power rankings that matter. At number 5, and I struggled here, Kenny. I struggled here because there was a different team I wanted to put in here. But then I looked at strength of schedule. I looked at opponent. I was going BCS style, but I chose to keep it the same as last week because they didn't do anything to lose the position. Okay. At number 5, the Baltimore Ravens. I strongly considered putting the Pittsburgh Steelers in here, but chose not to. I stuck with Baltimore. Baltimore continues to win. They haven't done anything to lose that position. At number 4, making their debut here on my power rankings, much to the same reason they made a debut on yours, the Tennessee Titans at number 4. I was really impressed by what they did yesterday, obviously knocking the Buffalo Bills out of my top 5. I kept the Green Bay Packers at number 3. They continue to be solid. And it boils down to this. It is pretty simple. Because of people like you and people like Rich and some of the other people on social media, I went against my heart and I went against my brain. The fact is, last week, I should have never have moved the number 1 team out of the number 1 slot. They should have remained there. And now here we are. Week 5, third week of the D'Lo and KC Power Rankings. I have this back to where it's supposed to be. After the Las Vegas Raiders beat the Kansas City Chiefs, they're back in the number 2 spot. And back where they belong, where Stop they it. Never should have left.
Stop it.
Where they are firmly entrenched as the number 1 team in the NFL. The Seattle Seahawks.
See, as Shannon Sharp would say, we got to stop this, Skip. They are not no overwhelming... How are they ahead of the Packers?
The MVP is on the team. They haven't lost. And up until a week ago, we thought this was the most difficult division in football. Now we've learned that that's probably not true anymore. But still, Seattle, number 1.
Well, you're entitled to be wrong. It's a free country.
Well, fine then. We'll come back. Sheldon Williams will be with us, and Meyer Power Rankings will continue to be right as D'Lo and KC continue here on Sacramento's number 1 sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo
and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Appreciate you being with us. I'm excited. Sheldon Williams is going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. Sheldon played, you know, very, very briefly for the Sacramento Kings, was a tremendous player at Duke University, hosts a podcast right now called The Lease Is Up. We used to spend some time together when he was here. He was the first player that I was, like, friends with, like, that, like we would hang out, that got traded, and I saw how that process worked. It's a really eye-opening process to see a dude, like, uprooted from, like, their life, you know what I mean? Like, they have, like, I think he had, like, 2 days to kind of clear out his apartment and, you know, gather stuff up and leave. And I remember he called, he was like, hey, there was this, I can't remember what the name of this dinner place was, but it was like these frozen, you know, dinners that you put together yourself. He was like, hey, I got like 25 of these that I can't do nothing with. Can you come get them? And I was like, geez, like, I ain't got room to store them. So I took them and wound up distributing them, you know, to different people to have and all of that. But yeah, that's a, you know, because we talk like that's what we do, right? We talk about trade scenarios and we're talking about shipping Buddy Hield off and all these different things. And it's pretty eye opening to see someone just told, okay, pack up all of your stuff that's here because you're moving across the country and you've got to do it within the next 48 hours. Yeah.
If I got traded today to like Tennessee Sports Talk Radio, like I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Wait, what? But that's part of the game for them. You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, this is part of the profession, and they make it happen. So yeah, it's one of those things where we just kind of look at it as sports and it's real life. Like there's real life moves that need to be made literally and figuratively. And when you put it in that way, it's a strange experience. I'm sure.
I mean, think about sports like if it was in real life, because sports very much isn't real life in any like way, shape or form for us. Yeah. But imagine the scenario you just laid out. Like, our boss calls and says, Kenny, you've been traded to Knoxville Sports Talk. Learn all you can about the Volunteers and the Lady Vols, and you're on your way out there, buddy. Good luck. Thank you for your contributions.
Yeah. And then what if I don't like Knoxville? Like, it's, I don't know where Sheldon got traded, but what if he got traded to Utah? Oh, my gosh. I got to live in Utah. No disrespect, but yeah.
Okay, no disrespect. I can't remember where Shell got traded. I know he came from Atlanta. I know he wound up in Boston because he was on. That's not where he got traded to, but I know he wound up on Boston because that's like he was a part of that game seven at the Staples Center. And I remember again, I saw him the next day, and like I mean, he wasn't a big member of that team, and I was just gutted for him. It was game seven of the NBA Finals, and. I'm glad we're getting this out of the way before he joins us and we start conjuring up all of the stuff about NBA life.
Yeah, I was in LA for that game seven, for that whole series. And that was, I was watching Kobe's first half in LA. Like, I was around a couple of Laker fans. They could not like believe what they were seeing. He hit the side of the backboard a couple of times and it was a scene, man. And then when
Celtics
they won,
were
it was
up.
Crazy.
Yeah, Celtics were up. Like we were at some restaurant or something, some sports bar in the is it LA Live or whatever that area is. Like, oh man, they're gonna lose this. Okay. We need to get back to the hotel because this is not going to be enjoyable whatsoever. And then God bless freaking Ron Artest.
Oh man,
makes that run, and all of a sudden the Lakers
Paul Gasol
got a championship.
Was great that game too.
Oh, he was great that series. He was really good that series. Do it for the Bay. Hit us on D'Lo and KC and said y'all need to use the eyeball test with Pittsburgh. They deserve to be on the power rankings.
I'm not mad at that comment, man. Pittsburgh got an argument, and if they handle business this next week, I mean, we might not be able to ignore them anymore. Might not be able to put no one-loss teams
ahead. It's not ignoring them. I mean, they are a game behind. It's not their fault, but they are, you know, they are a game behind, which is not going to be really a factor anymore moving forward because teams are starting to take their buys, like real, actual scheduled buys, not COVID-19 buys. But I didn't know what to I mean, Pittsburgh, you know, Baltimore, it's weird how, you know, these two teams, like Baltimore, you're almost looking at Lamar Jackson like, it's coming off of the MVP season. Baltimore did everything that they did last year. What are they, 4-1? But there's this kind of like, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure if they're as good as they were last year. We're comparing them to what they were last year. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Pittsburgh, they weren't very good last year. And so now they look, essentially back to normal.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, here they go. Oh, yeah. Pittsburgh is still a well-coached team, and it's still a completely operational unit out there when they're together.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, and you know how I feel about Mike Tomlin. And Mike Tomlin is doing what Mike Tomlin does. That's what I'm looking for out in Santa Clara, somebody to do what Mike Tomlin does, right? So, but I'm going to tell you this, as far as the power ranking goes, we may have a game to get in the power rankings next week.
Okay.
Pittsburgh at home against Cleveland.
Oh, man.
I can safely say that the winner probably gets in the power rankings.
Okay. I haven't even started to look at the schedule. All I know is there's no game tomorrow. That's the one thing I know for sure is there's no game tomorrow, and there's two games on Monday. Packers and the Bucks are this weekend, by the way, also. Yeah, we could bring in Sheldon Williams right now. We'll talk basketball with Sheldon Williams. Sheldon hosts the Leases Up podcast. But, Sheldon, are you still a big Cowboy fan?
Of course. That doesn't change. You know that.
Hey, Sheldon, it was good talking to you, man. we'll talk to you another time. And
See? How are you coping with this team right now?
I'm not going to lie. It's been difficult being a Cowboys fan for the last decade or so. But, you know, we always go 8-8 and then either miss out in the playoffs or make the first round and wind up losing in the first round. But this year, it was a little bit harder because we had about 4 or 5 starters out on our defense. Our defense has been kind of the reason why we haven't really done well. Our offense has been pretty good. And then this big injury with Dak, which was horrible to see. I felt hard and bad for him because, like, he bet on himself with the franchise tag. And something like this happens, and I hate when people try to put their own future in their own hands and something like this happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
Doug,
I got you, Shell. Let's transition here to the NBA. We were talking yesterday about, you know, the season's come to a close. We saw the Lakers win and all of that. But we were talking about this, you know, it was basically a 12-month season, Sheldon. And I can't imagine from, you know, you from a player's perspective of what it was like to, you know, you shut down in March not having any idea whether you're going to play again this season. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, guys, we're headed to Orlando. Let's get ready to play competitive basketball again. I know you're close with a lot of people in the leagues. Like, what was that 4 months like?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what was that 4 months like, do you think, as an athlete who's just got to stay ready?
No, definitely. I mean, there's two sides to it. One being guys that were having injuries and nagging injuries and whatever case may be, having the time to be able to rest and get their bodies back because, you know, you couldn't do that during the season because you're always playing, you know, 3-4, you know, times a week. So you're not able to do that. So having them have 4 months off, I think it really helped and rejuvenate a lot of guys, you know, especially with older teams and veteran teams. On the flip side, teams that are actually hitting their stride, it hurts them because, you know, it's a long, grueling season, 82 games, and you all of a sudden you have a team that's really hitting their stride trying to make a big push, and then all of a sudden you have a four-month layoff, and you got to kind of start from scratch all over again. But I will say that I was very impressed with the bubble simply because it was like a lot of people they were energized. They didn't have to worry about flying back across the country after the game or whatever the case may be, just go back to their room, rest their legs, and I thought the games were a lot better in the bubble because of that.
Wow. When you mentioned about teams that were like hitting their stride, that kind of got knocked off of their momentum, having the shutdown and everything. I mean, I think we saw that here in Sacramento. Weren't they like 13-6 in their last 19 games before the shutdown, and they can never get it going again in the bubble the same way? Sheldon, I want you to kind of talk about that a little bit more, about being in the bubble, about basketball in the bubble. And I don't want to say one is better or not, but not dealing with the travel, yet being, I've heard a lot of players say, isolated from the world. They felt they were isolated from the world being in that bubble. It's kind of a double-edged sword here, having that time to recuperate, but just being in this strange environment and trying to play playoff games.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that being tough with, you know, you being away from your family for more than you would be if you was actually playing in a regular season. Like, you know, at least when you're being with your family in the regular season, you might have maybe a week or so to go without seeing them, but now all of a sudden go without maybe a couple months, depending on quarantine time and all that stuff, whatever. I know it's tough for a lot of guys and a lot of people who actually, you know, kind of didn't go in the bubble because of our family or whatever issues they had with that. So I know that's a little bit different. But honestly, I don't know, for me as a fan, I love the idea simply because it was almost like a college March Madness feel to it, to be honest with you. It was like more so like people were really embracing that idea. Like you see like, you know, people on Snapchat or IG were – one stick out of mind where you had Jamal Murray, he's snapping and walking into campus, and you know Donovan Mitchell wind up having like I think 45 or 49 against them, whatever. But they wind up beating them. He's like, oh, he just put up 49 against us, and look at him right here on the, you know, at the table getting coffee. You know, I thought that was like a lot better because you can see more into the lives of these NBA players than you do in a regular season.
I'm Damian Barling. He's Kenny Caraway. Sheldon Williams joins us right now. Shel, I know you did some scouting for Brooklyn over the last couple of seasons, and they're kind of the team to watch this upcoming year. How quickly can this group led by Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving mesh together in a team that's already got some talented people on it?
Well, if I'm looking at history kind of goes against them. Until this year, with LeBron and AD team up, I don't think I could be wrong, but the last time I've seen that happen in the first year was Boston when all the guys, KG, Paul Pierce, yeah, and Ray Allen teamed up, and they won right away. So if you're looking at history, it's kind of against them like that because I don't see them. I'm not sure if they're able to mesh right away, but I will say they're already a good team without those two guys. As you saw, they made the playoffs without those two guys. But I don't know. I mean, some part back of my mind is kind of like how Boston was, where the number one and number two guys with Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward didn't play, and they were really, really good. Nobody expected them to be that good, and they kind of just meshed and played well together. I'm not sure how it is where a team that actually plays well together now, and then you put in two superstars and it changes everything, and how they do with Caris LeVert. I'm not sure how that fits in, how everybody kind of takes it. So it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of manage a lot of people, a lot of talented guys over there in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I'm interested to see it. This is maybe irrational because there's no draft or free agency has happened yet. I think the Brooklyn Nets are going to the finals next year. I believe in the KD and Kyrie pairing.
The NBA Finals or the Eastern Conference Finals?
NBA Finals, baby. I think they're going, and simply because I'm not sold on Milwaukee in the playoffs. I think that's the biggest thing to me that kind of hinders, and I think the Nets will be able to take care of that. I think they can make the NBA Finals next year.
Definitely. I mean, I agree with that. I was never sold on the Clippers or the Bucks. They're just a second-round team, no matter who's on the team. Until they break that mold, that's how they are. But I will say, it's going to be interesting to see how Doc does with these two guys in Philly, and then how well Miami played this year. Do they get a free agent guy this year or try to lure somebody from a trade to add on to maybe a superstar to a really good team? That's going to be interesting as well, Toronto. Toronto is a great team. I'm not sure if they're able to keep Fred VanVleet. That's a big a big problem for them right now too. So I know a lot of people are going to go after him. But the East, a lot of people knock the East, but the East is still a pretty good conference. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if they can get to the NBA Finals. I might have them as the Eastern Conference Finals, but I'm not sure if they can get to the NBA Finals. Mm.
You mentioned Doc Rivers. You played for him in Boston. We're big Doc Rivers fans. Like, what was playing for him like?
I would say when I got to Boston, a lot of people was like, oh, welcome to the NBA. And I was like, what do you mean? I've been in the NBA at the time, maybe 4 or 5 years. I'm like, what do you mean? When I got there, I realized what that meant. Leaving Duke, it was like from Coach K down to the guy who didn't play as much, everything was held accountable, and everybody was held accountable, no matter who it was. That's how it was with the great organization of Boston Celtics, where their reason why they won 17 times. They're a team that makes sure that from top to bottom, they hold everybody accountable, and they make sure that everybody does their work. And that's something that I saw going in. Like, it was very interesting to me because when I go in, I'm like a 4 or 5 year player at the time, and I'm going in for extra work before practice starts. And I look to my left, I see KG over here running sprints. I go out to the court, I see Ray Allen shooting, you know, shots, you know, 2 hours before practice starts. I'm like, these guys are Hall of Fame guys that have been in the league for 15, 16, 17 years and still doing and putting in the work. So for me, at 4 or 5 years, there's no way I couldn't not do that every day. If they bring it, why couldn't I bring it?
Yeah, it's the culture, man. It's definitely the culture. One more thing here I got for you, Sheldon, because you played against this guy, LeBron James, wins his fourth NBA championship, this time with the Los Angeles Lakers. Three championships with three different teams being the guy. Myself and Damian, we're Michael Jordan era. Like, that's Michael Jordan, right? That is the guy. We know every word of airtime. You know what I'm saying? So that's our guy. It's unfathomable in some respects to think that somebody can one day be better than Michael Jordan. I think when it's all said and done, LeBron James may have an argument to be the greatest player to ever play. You played against him. How do you feel about that thought of him being possibly the greatest to ever do it?
All right, first and foremost, I'm a big fan of what LeBron's been doing for the past 17 years. I mean, a kid that came out of high school had all this hype against him, and not only did he exceed it, he made sure that he put his team in position to succeed as well. And I, like you, I grew up as a Jordan fan as well. I don't have anybody over Jordan. That's just point blank. So whatever LeBron does for the next couple of years, whatever, I still don't have him over Jordan because he was that much of a dominant factor on the court, even though he didn't play as long as LeBron. But I will say I have him, when it's all said and done, be number two. And no disrespect to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. A lot of people kind of disrespect him because they don't put him in the top two or top three, whatever. He's a guy that should be talked about a lot more. But I will say when LeBron is all done, he has a chance to be an all-time NBA scorer, and he's not known for scoring. It's something he does. But he's a pass-first guy. I mean, as you saw it in Game 5, when he could have did a Kobe or Jordan-type thing where he'd take over and shoot the ball over four people and live and die with that shot, he made the right basketball play and give enough to Danny Green, who has really been shooting the ball well. But that's something that he does. He always has confidence in his teammates. He's a pass-first person, and the team first as well. But for him to accomplish all the stuff he's doing, it's been crazy to see over and over again, even though he gets talked about and disrespected. He's a very good player. He's the GOAT of this era. And like I said, he's still behind Michael Jordan no matter what, but he's still number two behind Jordan.
The name of the podcast is The Lease Is Up. You can check that out anywhere you get podcasts from. Shell, it was great catching up, man. We appreciate you. Thank you.
No problem. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Sheldon.
All right. That's Sheldon Williams there. Go check out his podcast. Again, it's called The Lease Is Up. That's a line. I'm so glad he used that line because it's one that I've heard before as it pertains to the Celtics. When you look at the teams that Shell played for. You know, he was drafted by Atlanta, and he has, you know, stories about that. He played here in Sacramento. He was part of the trade that sent Mike Bibby to the Hawks. He went to the Timberwolves after Sacramento, and then he went to Boston. So he was on the Timberwolves, the Kings, and the Hawks. Now, the Hawks weren't garbage, right. But they're not Boston.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you look at that and you get that line, welcome to the NBA. It's even to this day without Doc Rivers and Brad, it's Brad Stevens now. Even without KG is Jason Tatum. Even with the figures being gone, the environment is still exactly the same. Like, mm-hmm. they are the Boston Celtics. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they are run as a top-tier organization. So hearing him tell that story about showing up to practice, thinking he's getting in there early, about to get some work in, he realizes KG's already sweating late. And Ray Allen's already got up 100 shots and all of this. Yeah. He might be, you know, he might be an hour late depending on, you know, who you were looking at. I think there's a story one of them tells. Kevin Garnett was always, everywhere he's been, the first guy in, first guy in, first guy in. That 2008 season that they wound up winning the championship, KG goes to show up his first day. They're already there. He's like, okay. That's and obviously everybody had gotten wind of KG's work habits at that point. And so he got in there. He saw the habits that these guys were willing to establish. And I think that was the biggest part of what ultimately allowed them to be really – you know, when you talk about big threes and forming teams through free agencies and trades and immediate success, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons they were successful so quickly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One day, Damian, one day, some Sheldon Williams-like player will get traded to the Sacramento Kings and somebody will say, welcome to the NBA. One day.
Years down the line, man. Hopefully that's the case. There's a couple other notes. We were talking about Brooklyn a minute ago with Shell. Yeah, he does some scouting for them. Steve Nash, obviously the head coach. There's a report that came out from Frank Iasola, who says Mike D'Antoni. He is funny. Mike D'Antoni and Phil Handy may join his staff.
Phil Handy, that's Kyrie's guy. Kyrie loves Phil Handy. I think they work together in Cleveland. Phil Handy is one of the he's an assistant coach, but he's like one of the big trainers, skills trainers in the NBA. And Kyrie is like his guy. He was with the Cavs when they beat the Warriors in 2016. And
wasn't he in LA? Guy. Didn't he just win?
He was with the Lakers.
Yep. So yeah, I mean that's not really the name. I think you know people entrenched in basketball know Phil Handy. They follow you know various people. You'll see. You mentioned Kyrie. You'll see Danny Green. You'll see people all across the league giving that man his love.
I didn't mean to bury Mike D'Antoni. That was definitely the newsworthy one right there. You're 100% right. Phil Handy I had heard about Mike D'Antoni, hadn't heard about Phil Handy. That's why I just stuck out. But
Handy just goes to championship teams. He was in Toronto last year with Toronto Danny Green. He was in Los Angeles.
So, and that goes to my point of Brooklyn making the NBA Finals. If Phil Handy is there, that's what it is. But no, to your point, Mike D'Antoni on the bench, that would be big. Like, that would be crazy.
I mean, it's not funny, like, ha-ha, to steal a line from, you know, Joe Pesci and Goodfellas. But, like, Mike D'Antoni coached Steve Nash to two MVPs, and it's like, all right, fella, you're going to try to get your feet wet here in the coaching game. I'll come help you. Yeah. And it's so weird. Mike D'Antoni, from everything we had heard, was going to be the Philadelphia 76ers head coach.
Yeah.
And then it was, oh, wait a minute, Doc Rivers is available. Let's go talk to Doc. That deal gets done. It's one of those college recruiting things where it's like, don't let them leave without getting a commitment. Mm-hmm. Doc Rivers never left. They gave him the commitment. They locked him up for 5 years, and now it's Mike D'Antoni's. Like, there's still a ton of jobs available, but apparently this is something that's on the table for him.
If that were to go down, that would be a great get for Steve Nash.
That'd be huge.
I mean, I know we talk about Mike D'Antoni in a way where we talk about his failures and his cap as a head coach, his ceiling. But I mean, if you could get him on that staff with that team. No. Man, that would be make them verified.
Yeah, it's interesting. I always try to picture. I mean, we just saw Mike D'Antoni work with Russell Westbrook. We saw him work, for a lengthy period of time, with James Harden, get James Harden to an MVP. Like, what can he do with Kyrie Irving? We know that Kyrie has a bit of a unique personality, so to speak. What can he do with Kevin Durant, who I think has his own unique style of personality? There's a couple of other head coaching notes that we'll talk about, and we'll talk about your head coach. The head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. I don't think, Kenny, you're going to like what he said today.
Oh, gosh, come on, Kyle. Come on.
Practice is underway for the San Francisco 49ers. Kyle Shanahan has spoken to the media. We'll let you know what he said today as it pertains to the quarterback position. Plus, Kenny and I will go one-on-one as D'Lo and Casey continue here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
Now back to D'Lo and KC.
D'Lo and KC
on ESPN 1320.
Fun conversation with Sheldon Williams. If you missed any part of it, download the radio.com app in your app store. It's completely free. No sneaky charges anywhere, and use the rewind feature. Scroll back to 12:55 and just listen. That's it. And it'll take you all the way to the end of the show, man. It's beautiful. A couple of quick coaching notes in the NBA before we get to Kyle Shanahan. Stan Van Gundy apparently is a finalist for the job in New Orleans.
Okay.
That's not the Van Gundy. Like I actually thought Stan Van did a fantastic job on television, and
he was good on TV.
I thought he might slide right into Jeff's place if Jeff wound up going back to the sidelines. From what it sounds like, and I don't know this for sure, Jeff Van Gundy is interviewed for the Houston position. It sounds like Houston is really the only position he wants. Mm-hmm. That's where he lives. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't just want to – he don't want to grab the fam and go do another NBA coaching gig when he has an already, you know, really good gig with ESPN.
Right.
So – I'm not sure how that plays into all of this, but Stan Van Gundy in New Orleans was not something that I expected to hear about.
Not at all. Stan Van is a good coach. I mean, he reached the NBA Finals. I don't know if I'd go that route if I was in New Orleans.
It's not the one. I don't know. I'm not a knock on Stan Van Gundy. I don't know what is better though for that unit that they have there. Do you need an experienced coach like Stan Van Gundy? Do you need, a first time head coach like, Sam Cassell's name is all over there. Ty Lue, we don't know where he's going to wind up.
I'd definitely rather see a guy like Sam Cassell get an opportunity there, man, than Jeff or Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah. Well, either of them, really. Yeah, like either of them.
Right.
Either of them. So, okay, a quick sidebar question. I don't know how much time we need to spend on Stan Van Gundy and Jeff Van Gundy, but we're talking about coaches kind of leaving and then coming back. Mm-hmm. Would you be upset if Bruce Bochy came back to manage?
Absolutely. Well, I was about to say absolutely not, but that means he's not coming back to the Giants. So, yeah, I mean, I would, yeah. Yeah, I would. It would hurt to see him. I'd be hurt to see him with another team. But I kind of feel like in that situation, reading the tea leaves, kind of got forced out. You know, it was billed as this retirement, but I don't think he was really ready to retire. And I could see him coming back.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you don't like the idea.
Nah, I wish he retired as a Giants manager, but I don't think that's going
to
be the case.
I think there's starting to be like rumblings that like Tony La Russa might come back, and this is interesting. Like,
now,
all right.
Tony La Russa, he ain't been around for at least a decade, right?
Decade, yeah. Wasn't he the manager when the Cardinals won?
Yeah.
And he's been gone since then. He's out.
He was like a front office guy in Arizona, and I think he still is. I don't know, but I know that was like his next thing.
Yeah, he last coached in 2011. I saw the Bochy story. I was like, I wonder. Because they built it up to be this big, like, warm, fuzzy moment. But like you, it was kind of like, I don't know that it's what they're making it out to be, but everybody's going along with it. Mm. So let's roll with it. And I thought, I'm going to ask Kenny how he feels about
Boch, my man, Boch.
Well, y'all warm and fuzzy about Bruce Bochy. How about Kyle Shanahan? Here's what Kyle Shanahan had to say at his press conference today, while practice is going on. He said that both C.J. Beathard and Nick Mullins will get some work in practice this week. He said he has not made a decision about which quarterback is next in line for the 49ers. Chris Biederman reported all appearances going into practice today. All signs are pointing to Jimmy Garoppolo being the starting quarterback.
Okay.
Now, that's not what really got my attention. What got my attention, Kenny, was Kyle Shanahan said if he'd be open to pulling Jimmy Garoppolo again if he continued to struggle. And I thought that was fascinating. I thought that was fascinating because just the other day, Kyle Shanahan told us he didn't pull him because he was struggling. He pulled him because of his ankle.
Oh, man. All this double talk, man. All this double and triple talk is catching up with him, man. Kyle, man, just Just stop, bro. Just stop.
I wasn't. I thought you were. I was allowing you to share your emotions on Monday. And then we had the sound from Kyle Shanahan on Tuesday. Kenny's probably, you know, he's seeing it from a fan. He's overdoing it a little bit. Like, it's fine. Like, I get you. It's an opinion. That's what we're sports fans giving opinions.
Yeah.
Bruh, you might have hit the nail on the head with this one. Like, he's talking every which way. Again, we have always been the belief that whether he likes the question or not, he's going to answer it, he being Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
This is the first time it's clear he's dodging how he feels about Jimmy Garoppolo or what he thinks about the current state of Jimmy Garoppolo, because his last two press conferences, when you add them together, they don't make any sense.
They've been ridiculous, to be honest with you. And he kind of needs to calm down a little bit, all right? There's things that Jimmy doesn't do that he doesn't, you know, that he needs or whatever the case may be. But this is the guy that's your quarterback. There is no Jordan Love on the roster where you can throw the rookie out there, a promising rookie out there. You have nothing behind him. Nothing. At best, you have Nick Mullins. But C.J. Beathard ain't it. And you need to make sure, if you're Kyle Shanahan, that Jimmy Garoppolo understands that you have his back, that you're there for him. And with every decision that he's made over the last 48 hours, Kyle Shanahan, with the way he's talked, taking him out of the game at halftime, all that is shattered, completely shattered. And I don't know if Kyle, he's not showing me that he has what it takes to rebuild that, to build this guy up. Say what you want about Harbaugh, and I certainly have, but regardless if he believed it or not, he built Alex Smith up after Alex Smith had been beaten down here in San Francisco. We're not in San Francisco, but in Northern California, in the San Francisco media. He had been beaten down. And Jim Harbaugh coddled him, protected him, and built him up to a point where he almost took them to a Super Bowl. Well, and Kyle Shanahan is doing almost the opposite right
it
now.
It wasn't just the San Francisco media or the Northern California media. Remember Alex Smith, where he was drafted. When you're drafted at that spot, you're now under national media scrutiny, and he had been torn apart for years. And, yeah, I think that's one of Harbaugh's greatest accomplishments as a coach. I mean, we had some fun, you know, I think it was last week, talking about Stanford and what he did, you know, with Stanford in a random conversation we were having. But what he did with Alex Smith, a guy who had been completely written off, and who has gone on since his time with Harbaugh. It's fascinating when you look at the stability of an organization. The 49ers gained some stability for a short period with Harbaugh, and you saw what it did for Alex Smith. He goes to the most stable head coach in the entire league, or certainly one of them, in Kansas City, and you see what he's able to accomplish there.
Yeah.
But I think what Harbaugh did with Alex Smith is one of Harbaugh's greatest accomplishments.
I just feel as a head coach, your job isn't to have, I mean, everybody would like this perfect player that you can just do whatever you want with. That's not reality. Sometimes you have to find out what a player does well, what he does best, and put him into situations to execute the things that he can do at a high level consistently. And I think too many times Kyle Shanahan, he looks at quarterbacks and like, oh, they don't do this. I'm ready to move on. Whatever the case may be, I can't work with this. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't have a long history of him doing that. He's only been a head coach one time, but I just get the vibe that that's what it is from him. And he needs to get that out of him with Jimmy. Like, that can't be the case. This is your guy right here. And you need to look at him as, okay, I have Jimmy Garoppolo. Let me find out how to utilize him best and bring the best out of Jimmy Garoppolo, instead of just being like, well, you know, if he doesn't play good, you know, I could pull him again. Like, that don't help nothing. That don't help nothing.
Am I alone to think that if you can't play the entire 60 minutes, like if we have questions, like legitimate questions as to whether you can make it through the entire 60 minutes, maybe you don't play him at all.
Yeah.
Because wouldn't this, and I go back, and I'm sorry, you know, that I keep doing this. I may still actually have the sound here, but I go back to him talking about, you know, what their approach will be this week. Here's what Kyle Shanahan said a couple of days ago.
Jimmy came in good. I mean, I know he's sore from the first half. I think his ankle's a little bit sore and his body a little bit from some of the hits that he had, but nothing that made it worse. And it was like you expected after a game. Nothing too bad happened. We got him out of there before that did. So we'll see how he is on Wednesday. I expect him to be at least the same, if not better. So hopefully we can get a week of that and have no setbacks Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And hopefully we get him out there Sunday night.
So if you're already, because of what he said, today, and that, if we have to take him out and put in Beathard or Mullins, whoever, we'll do that. Doesn't that just create a cycle? Aren't you doing that over and over and over again? Because I think the question to, I don't feel like you can ask the athlete, but you certainly allow them to be a part of the process. You talk to Jimmy Garoppolo. You talk to your medical staff, and perhaps, for Jimmy's sake, you talk to an independent medical person. Can he play a football game right now? Not a half, not a quarter. Can he play and function at the, capability of a top 15, 12, 10 quarterback in the NFL? Can he play at that level? Yes or no? No, coach, he can't. Then he can't play. Because if we keep doing this where, okay, if he's hurt or if he's struggling, we're going to pull him out. What are you going to do next week? He just says, it's going to be the same as last week. Aren't you going to wind up getting the same result?
Seems like it. And then then you got Jimmy. There's a whole, and I know some people were made for, them lights and pressure and all this other stuff, but that's unnecessary pressure to basically say, Jimmy, you got to be close to perfect. So I'm going to pull you. Who wants to play like that?
Yeah.
Like I said, I've coached teams in different sports and things of that nature. I've never wanted a player to lack confidence, right? I wanted you to be fully confident that I believe in you to handle a job. There's ways to do that, finagle it so you can be upset with them or something like that, yank them out, but not embarrass them, not shatter their confidence, whatever. You want them to have full confidence in what they're doing, to feel good about themselves. And if Jimmy, by those quotes and by what he said today, if you're not playing damn near perfect in the first half, you could come out. That's the wrong message to send.
We'll always let people in behind the scenes of our show because that's just who and what we are. During the last commercial break, as soon as we get the clear from Jesse, I say, dude, I completely flubbed the first question to Sheldon. Sorry, I was looking at Kenny to say something. Kenny was looking at me to say something. I brought Sheldon in with some sort of Dallas Cowboy question because we were talking about football and completely flubbed the whole thing. I'm trying to envision a scenario where, our program director comes to us and says, if you guys aren't sharper in your interviews, I'm gonna yank you mid-show and put in Deuce and Mo.
Right.
You know what I mean? Okay.
How does that work?
I'm trying to figure out, does that motivate me? Does that make me more nervous? How do we, okay, what do we do? And now you're sitting on these pins and needles. Oh, cough again. Go ahead, cough again, Kenny. Cough one more time and watch what happens to our show. It's a weird way to approach a situation that already seems to be looked at really delicately because so far, not to any fault of his own, meaning that he missed a couple of weeks, but right now up until week five, he's only played good. He's only had a memorable half of the season, not half of the season, a half of a football game so far this season. You're coming out of the Arizona game Jimmy, okay, everybody, this is the big I told you so moment for everybody. And then he goes out there and he has the half that he does against the Jets, I think, were first. And he winds up, he doesn't play against the Giants. We see what goes on against Philadelphia and all of that. And then the next time we see him, he's injured and he stinks. So it's it's a double all right, man. We're adding gasoline to a fire that's already been kind of raging within this fan base, and not even within this fan base, anyone who evaluates the San Francisco 49ers for the last year plus.
You said it perfectly. You're adding gasoline to the fire if you're Kyle Shanahan. No need to do that. All right. If there's already a little fire simmering, you don't need to come in there with yanking him at halftime, talking about you might do it again the next week. Kyle, it's disappointing the way he's handling this because he's doing it all wrong, in my opinion. And look, we appreciate the fact that he is truthful and he keeps it real when he's in these press conferences. We don't need to know everything to be. I'm a big believer in that. We don't need to know every single thing that you feel as a coach and what's going on in your locker room. Some things are meant to be kept in the locker room and in private and in the coach's room, in the quarterback's room. We don't need all the transparency. I'm a firm believer in that.
What do they have to do? Like, how can they win this game coming up? They've got a Sunday night football game against a Rams team that has played really, really well this season. It appears that their offense is back. Jared Goff has been solid. And we're for the 49ers, or for more for the 49er faithful, it's just like, yo, like, how we're looking at the Rams, we're looking at the Patriots, we're looking at the Seahawks, all of these games coming up, and we just lost to the Eagles, who I think the Eagles got it together this weekend against Pittsburgh. Like, they looked really good, I thought, against Pittsburgh. They just lost to a better football team. Mm-hmm. And we lost to Arizona, who's marginally declined since that week one win. So you're just kind of left here, if you're a 49er faithful, like, yo, I...
Well, it's real
you're taking
simple.
That deep breath, like gearing up for just what's going to be a long month.
Well, it's real simple, in my opinion. One place where they are starting to get healthy is on the offensive end. And I've been saying it for weeks. You're going to have to really rely on this offense. Then it's going to be an offense where it's not going to be necessarily a quick strike offense. It's going to be a ball control offense where you take care of the ball, you control the clock, you convert your third downs, and you're putting up your 25 to 30 points that way. Not something quick like, you know, Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, two-play, 85-yard drives, nothing like that. It's going to have to be being able to consistently get 9-10-play drives and convert them into touchdowns. And it's going to be on the offense, and that is maybe the one bright spot with this 49ers team is offensively they're starting to get their guys back. And Kyle talked about it yesterday as far as getting practice in. Maybe this is the first week all season that they're able to get a full practice and a full week of practice in with their number ones. And that's how you're going to win on Sunday. You're going to have to control the game on the offensive end.
A couple of, you know, things that may ease the faithful just a smidge here.
Yeah, try me.
The Rams beat the Cowboys. Okay? Like, I'm just telling, they beat the Cowboys. They beat the Eagles in week two. Mm-hmm. They beat the Eagles big in week two. They lost 35-32 to the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat the football team. That's who they beat. Yeah. Not diminishing their wins. I'm just pointing out their wins.
Yeah.
They have two of them against, dude, oh my God, they've beaten the entire NFC. East. The Cowboys, the Eagles, the Giants, and Washington. They've beat the NFC East. That's all they've done.
Wow. And we're talking about by far the worst division in the game.
Now, I told you, though, if the 49ers lost to Miami, it would be difficult to approach this week or any of the weeks ahead going, yeah, but the 49ers can win because. Mm-hmm. Like, we can try to come up with ways the 49ers can win. Like, I'm completely with you on ball control. It's why I was so frustrated. I thought Raheem Mostert's got to get the ball more. And obviously, this is a non-starter if Jimmy Garoppolo, Nick Mullins, C.J. Beathard, or freaking Kyle Shanahan himself is under center. It doesn't matter if they don't protect the ball. Mm-hmm. They can't turn the ball over. Turnovers have been massive in all three of their losses. Yeah. And I guess in the first one, it wasn't necessarily a turnover. It was the block punt that was a game changer.
Yeah.
But still... in the last two, turnovers were a big factor. They can't turn the ball over, which is why I was screaming on Monday, give the ball to Raheem Mostert. You spent all week talking about how dynamic he is for your offense. Give the ball to the man. If you got to give Mostert a breather, man, give it to Jerick McKinnon. He had just come off two games where he had carried the ball 15 times in each of them. Mm-hmm. Split the load a little bit and keep the ball on the ground.
All hands on deck on Sunday. There was the game last year in New Orleans where it felt like, I think they had some injuries going into that game on the defensive end. I remember Tart was out. They had another injury. I think Quan was out at that point. But it was a thought, and you can just read the tea leaves with the way the game was playing out, that Kyle and everybody knew if they were going to win that game in New Orleans, they were going to have to put up points. And Kyle got in his bag offensively. Got in his bag. He was calling everything to precision. And they're going to need that Kyle Shanahan on Sunday and probably moving forward up into the bye week. You're going to need Kyle Shanahan to coach schematically the best he's done in his head coaching career. He is going to have to be locked in
for the next 5 weeks on his play calling, on the rhythm of the play calling, you know, keeping the defense off balance. He's going to have to be in his bag, and he's going to have to do all that while leading men. So this is why you get paid the big bucks. This is why you get the contract extension, because they believe that in these moments, you can keep their head above water. The week ain't starting off good, I'll tell you that. But Sunday night, he's going to have to be in his bag.
I can't tell you, like, I can't overstate how amused I am that the four wins from the Rams have come against the NFC East. Like, all four of them, because I looked at it at first, like, okay, Eagles, Cowboys, and then it didn't even dawn on me till I said all four teams that's who they've beaten. But with that said, you know, they put up minimal points against the Giants, but they put up 32 against the Bills. They put up 37 against the Eagles, 20 opening weekend, and then 30 against Washington. Like, this, the quote, Sean McVay offense appears to, at least in some form, have returned a little bit. Mm-hmm. So while I'm all for the long, sustained drives, they've got to result in points. They've got Absolutely. To get points out of them. You were talking about, you know, the 10, 11, 12 play drives. You know, we're talking the 6.5, 7, 7.5 minute drives. Keep the ball out of Goff's hands, tire that defense, and then hopefully in the fourth quarter, maybe you have a chance to get up two scores, or maybe you have a chance to have the last possession of the game and get that final, you know, get that final score that gets you the win. I think the way the 49ers win this game is to keep the score as low as possible.
Oh, instead of they don't have a chance in hell of keeping the score low, but no, I disagree. They don't have the defense to keep the score as low as possible. This is going to have to be one where you're going to have to get ready to put up 30 points to win.
So the odd thing about this is, with what you just said, if you want long sustained drives for the 49ers that result in, say, 7 minutes, 8 minutes of clock, you could have the Rams very well, because the Rams can be that offense that you spoke of earlier, which you don't want the 49ers to do this weekend, and they could be the one with the quick strike, and then the offense is right back on the field. At some point, the offense is going to tire themselves out if that winds up being the case.
Well, maybe so, but you're going to have to put up points in a major way. And let me be clear,
really?
I don't care how they do it.
I can't.
And I know you don't either. I don't care how they do it. If it's 5 1-play, 80-yard drives, cool.
Yeah.
Like, put up the points, but... Yeah, it's going to have to – you're going to have to win. I think you're going to have to score 30 points to win on Sunday.
And the frustrating part about this is none of it – like, absolutely none of it feels realistic. Not the 7.5, 8-minute drive, not the
the
quick
offense,
strike drive.
The offense, I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. The offense, like I said, this is – they're finally getting people back. They play terrible against Miami. The offensive line is interesting that – I'm about to say that they're playing terrible, because there's actually some quotes from Trent Williams and Mike McGlinchey saying that it's been a little bit overblown. But they haven't been very good.
Of course they're both going to say that, because the two people that everybody is looking at is Trent Williams and Mike McGlinchey.
Yeah, I mean, so
don't go Kyle Shanahan on me, man. McGlinchey has not had a good season.
He hasn't had a good season, but people talk about Trent Williams, right? I came in talking about, like, the offensive line hasn't been good. They were terrible on Sunday, or whatever the case may be. Trent Williams, I think, officially gave up 2 pressures in the 20 dropbacks. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not horrendous like we feel it is. You know what I'm saying? It's 2 pressures in 20 dropbacks with Jimmy in there or something like that. It's not – even Mike McGlinchey, 4. I think he had 4. He had the most of 4 pressures given up in that time. And it feels like every time they drop back, there's a pressure being given up. But literally, that's not what's happening.
So this actually just adds to my frustration, because Kyle Shanahan said he feels like the blocking hasn't gotten worse. He feels like the offensive line hasn't gotten worse. And what he said almost verbatim what you just said. I feel like the play, particularly of Mike McGlinchey, has been overblown. I'm not really of the mindset that Trent Williams has played bad. So you can kind of like count.
I thought he's
that
played
group.
Bad the last
but,
2 weeks.
I thought he played bad against Miami. I don't think he's had a bad season.
He got destroyed against Philadelphia. It felt like it.
Maybe Philadelphia just feels like a distant freaking memory after what we saw on Sunday, so forgive me. But if that's the case, though, like if Kyle Shanahan is still sold on the offensive line, why is and forgive me for playing the same freaking song over and over again. Why isn't he running the ball?
When you're down 21-7. He might have panicked
Why
a little bit.
Why isn't the game plan to start with the ball on the ground?
From what I can remember, they didn't come out passing three straight times in the first drive. There was a run there, and they ended up being third, I think four, maybe, which is manageable. But typically, he's facing these 6, 7, 8 man boxes, and they're running into walls. They're running into walls. Like, we can even say that, like, Mostert has had the big play, but they haven't been gashing people on the ground. Like, Jeff Wilson against the Giants, not good.
Well, no, I think
he averaged, like, 2 yards a carry. Against the Jets, same thing. Like, 2 yards a carry. They have not ran the ball well at all. Philadelphia was terrible. Remember, I was saying, why is Jared McKinnon getting every carry and getting nothing? Like, they've been terrible on the ground, too.
So what's the problem then? Like, if the blocking is the same and the running game has been terrible, do they need to go get Le'Veon Bell? Le'Veon Bell's he's free.
I wouldn't be mad at that.
He's free from the Jets. Do you want to go grab him? And because there's a problem somewhere, but we can't get acknowledged. It seems like Kyle Shanahan has gone out of his way to protect everybody except for his quarterback. Yeah. He's protected McGlinchey. He's protected the offensive line. He's said the right things with all of them except for Jimmy Garoppolo.
And to your point, they ran the ball reasonably well on Sunday. The game just got out of hand, I thought, on Sunday. But they ran, I mean, Mostert was 11 for 90. You know what I mean? So,
like, and the long in that was like 37. So even if you take the 37 out, he's still 6 yards a touch.
Yeah. I mean, to their credit, and to your point, they ran the ball statistically well, you know, on Sunday, but the game was out of hand. It was a 20-point game.
Well, the problem is they gave up 14 points before you even knew what happened. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, like, they didn't and I feel like this is where Kyle Shanahan, they didn't stick with, if that was their game plan, they didn't stick with it. They abandoned it and put it on the shoulder, or maybe in this week's case, the ankle of Jimmy Garoppolo, and it failed miserably.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's got to be better, man. Across the board, everyone's got to be better. And that's the way this locker room has to look at it. Everybody's got to take accountability and say, I've got to do better. I got to do my job. That's the bottom line. From Kyle down to the offensive line, down to the secondary. I've got to be better. That should be posted in that locker room, a banner above it. I've got to be better.
You want to go, we're going to block Javon on Twitter all week. Just hit the block button. He's gonna send us every Rams GIF stat all the way up until Sunday night.
The funny thing about Javon and his situation is when I gave props to the Rams and I told them, oh yeah, they're looking good. He's like, well, yeah. See what happens when you're not injured and when you don't have injuries. Oh, look who is like injured this year. Mm. And he's like, oh, I told you they weren't no good. You just told me it was because of injuries last year with the Rams. It can't be injuries this year with the 49ers. Come on, man.
You know,
call a spade a spade.
Bro, sports fans are irrational, man. You know that. Come on, man. That's the fun in what we do. And, of course, Javon,
ain't going to hear the end of it. If Niners pulled this off on Sunday, he might block me. I'm going to tell you that right now. He might block me because it's going to get crazy.
Jamie Burling, Kenny Curley. 4 topics, 2 arguments, no winners. D-Lo and KC.
Our man Javon, the Rams fan, has tweeted every account we have in the last 15 minutes. It's going to be a fun week.
Shout out to Javon, man. Shout out to that dude.
It's going to be a fun week headed into...
It's Rams week, baby. It's Rams week. This in the 80s and the 90s. This was the week right here. Rams week is back. They're in L.A., so it's Rams week again, man. Let's go.
And Sunday night football as well. Game day, 3 o'clock. Mid-afternoon with D'Lo and Casey. We'll be on from 3 to 4:20, and then we'll be on following the game as well. All right, Casey, 4 months ago, which one of these two scenarios would you have been more likely to believe? The Miami Heat would be in the NBA Finals, or the Tampa Bay Rays would be in the World Series?
Well, look. For both of them, I would say you need to get more sleep. You're not thinking clearly, right? Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, absolutely the Miami Heat. There's no way. I mean, I know I do this for a living. I don't know anybody on the Tampa Bay Rays. Nobody. Like, when I see him, oh, yeah, I've seen that guy play. I know who he is. But if you ask me right now, if you quiz me, name five Tampa Bay Rays, I would fail.
Isn't that the case?
And you mean to tell me they're about to win the World Series, possibly?
Isn't that the case with most baseball teams?
Like, it is nowadays.
Like, you know,
when I
like
was younger, oh, I knew everybody's lineup, especially in the National League. I can go 1 through 9 with a lineup for like 10 teams in the National League. I knew everything about baseball. Nowadays,
did you collect baseball cards?
Absolutely.
That's how I did. That's how
I thought
I
was rich. I thought I was borderline a millionaire thanks to those Beckett books that showed how much card was, and I'd add them up. Man, I'm about to be rich if I sold this right now.
I got my favorite Beckett magazine hanging behind me, the one with Bo Jackson
it's
and
a
the
classic.
No, I was the same way. That's how I knew every. I knew what the 40-40 club was. Like, I knew everything about the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants. My cousins used to basically pimp me out at those games where you go in and you get the cards. Like, it'd be like card games. So every time you go through the turnstiles, you get a deck of cards.
Yeah.
I'd have to go in and out over and over and over again because they'd buy all these tickets to collect these cards because they were like, you know, they were card sellers. They'd go to these card shows and do all of this thing. But that taught me so much about baseball and numbers and memorizing all of that stuff. But I feel like now, you know, some guy, of course, I mean, obviously, you know, Houston, you know everything about Houston now, probably all entirely for the wrong reasons. But you know about teams like the Dodgers, the Yankees, things like that. Yeah, the Rays, the one note that we have for you is the payroll was like $28 million,
which is
less than Garrett Cole makes.
That like, is crazy.
By himself.
And these boys be balling. Let's be perfectly clear. They're not here by luck. They play some good baseball. Like these boys be playing, man. I've been very impressed by what I've seen from the Rays this postseason because, honestly, it was the first time I'd seen them all year. And they play some good baseball.
They're not headed into, like, a Game 6 or a Game 7 with a chance to clinch. Like, they're up 3-0.
Yeah.
They're beating the Astros up.
Yeah, they are.
But with all of that said, I would just chalk that up to my ignorance of basketball. You would have told me Miami got through Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, and Philly? Wow. Like, again, you go 4 months ago, that would have been a tough one. As highly as I think of Miami today, and as much as I respected Miami 4 months ago, That's not one that I could have envisioned. I just would have thought, oh, yeah, I don't know enough about Tampa, but there's no way Miami's going to be in the NBA Finals.
Yeah. I mean, they had a long road, too. They were a team that, you know, was a pipe dream to get to the NBA Finals, but at least I could make that pipe dream out. I could see how, you know, it could possibly happen. The Rays had no clue. And they look like the best team in baseball right now.
They finished, 40-20. That was their record.
Mm.
40-20. The Astros. I don't know why we thought the Astros were going to win this series. They were 11 games worse. They were 29-31 entering this expanded playoffs.
Wow. So we're going to stay with baseball. We're going to do it. We're staying in the playoffs. And my Atlanta Braves, shout out to Fred McGriff. Shout out to Ron Gant. Shout out to David Justice. All right. My Atlanta Braves went up 2-0. On the Dodgers yesterday in a big way. I think the final score was 8-3. They were up 6-0 at one point. Damian, 2-0 for the Braves. Is this one over?
Just you shouted out David Justice and didn't shout out Halle Berry?
Shout out to Halle Berry. Always.
You know Halle Berry was in Oak Park once?
I was there.
For the Eric Benet concert.
Oh, my gosh. That was like an all-time moment. That was hopping. The Eric Benet concert at McClatchy Park was one of the all-time moments in this city. It was crazy.
When she walked out on that stage, that was
that was an all-time almighty moment in this city.
What was the question? What was the question about Halle Berry? Love should have brought you home. What was the question? Boomerang, which was it? No. And don't try to get Jason Jones mad at me by saying the series is over. Absolutely not. It's 2-0. You can come back from 2-0.
Absolutely. Home
field shifts? Are we in L.A. now? Is that how it works?
It depends on what kind of fans they let into Arlington. I'm not sure what kind of hats they're giving out at the turnstiles.
It was a fight last night, but I don't think that I think the Tampa Bay-Houston series is over. I don't think this one's over yet. I'm not passing up. I can't get on the bandwagon with your Atlanta Braves just yet.
Yeah, those are my guys. Those are my guys. I'm not burying these Dodgers until they're done. I don't care if it goes 3-0, 3-1, whatever. Until they're gone, I'm not going to count them out because, you know, they have the best roster in the game. So, yeah. Braves, keep handling business. Braves got a 2010 Giants feel to them the way they're playing right now, though. Their pitching is lights out. Absolutely lights out. And it reminds me of the Giants in 2010.
We brought Jim Harbaugh's name up earlier. He's the only Power 5 coach with less than 2 years remaining on his contract. Very few in the Power 5 have less than three, and he's already had a little spat with Michigan's president. He's getting paid $8 million, and he is by far the worst coach getting paid that much. His deal is up in 14 months, so I ask you this. Next year, is Harbaugh more likely to be coaching in college or the NFL?
It's in college, but I'll say this with a caveat. He's going to the Bears in 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, I think Nagy survives this year, but I think he'll be bad next year. And it'll be an opening, and Harbaugh will go to the Bears.
Since we're running out of time, I'll do this quickly. You're wrong. He's going to be in the NFL next year because there's no way he's playing out the final 14 months or coaching out the final 14 months of his contract. He's not going to be in some lame duck thing. If normally buyouts could be the remaining balance of the contract, whatever team wants him, we'll take that. And if Harbaugh is available, Matt Nagy is disposable. You believe he's going to wind up in Chicago, but we're both of the belief there are going to be a lot of NFL jobs available.
Real quick, Alabama versus Ole Miss this past weekend. Alabama wins like they always do against Ole Miss in the SEC. Mm-hmm. But they gave up a lot of points on Saturday, and Nick Saban believes that Lane Kiffin was stealing his defensive signals. Who do you believe? Lane Kiffin actually denies it. Nick Saban or Lane Kiffin?
I don't believe anything Lane Kiffin says, ever. It's just the golden rule. Don't believe anything Lane Kiffin says. Though, if you're Nick Saban, you also got to come up with some sort of excuse as to how your team gave up 48 points and 647 yards.
Wow. Yeah. I believe Saban.
Yeah. Just, I don't think I'll ever believe anything Lane Kiffin says. We appreciate you so much for being with us. If you missed any part of today's show, the radio.com app is the exclusive home of our podcast. You can also use the rewind feature. Scroll back to 12 o'clock. I want to thank Sheldon Williams for being with us. We ask you to follow us at ESPN 1320 at D'Lo and KC. And we ask you to join us again tomorrow here on Sacramento's #1 sports station. Damon Radakovsky are coming up next on ESPN 1320.